Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake, Iowa has been declared a National Historic Landmark. We will talk about its history. But first, another kind of history. Two different projects in Iowa are designed to collect and preserve the history of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and non-binary Iowans. In a few minutes, A.J. Lewis of Grinnell College will be here to talk about the LGBT Oral Histories of Central Iowa Project, which was founded in 2019. But first, Aidan Bettine is here. He is director of the LGBTQ Iowa Archives and Library in Iowa City, founded in 2020. He is also creator of the Transgender Oral History Project of Iowa. Aidan, hello.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And this is new to a lot of Iowans, the LGBTQ Iowa Archives and Library. Tell me about the organization.
So we are a community archives and lending library that is specifically for the LGBTQ community on one hand, but also explicitly about LGBTQ history in Iowa. And so we have a lending library, a wonderful art gallery space, and we're working on building archival collections to demonstrate that queer people have and always will be a part of Iowa's history.
Tell me about your physical location. I know this is an exciting step forward for you.
Yeah, so we just opened literally a month ago today on January 15th. We are in downtown Iowa City in the basement of the Wesley Center on Dubuque Street. And we have three fantastic rooms devoted to essentially each of our projects. So one room is devoted to our lending library and currently houses almost 1,300 books. And we just got a number of donations this past week. And then we have an office archival room that houses archival material and oral history kits, because oral history, of course, is a really huge part of our work. And then we have a third room that is an art gallery space where we're currently hosting a series of queer Iowan artists and putting up solo shows in that space.
Tell me about the genesis of this project. When did you start working on it?
So this project has been in thought, I think, for a number of years between AJ and I, actually, as two people who've been committed to queer oral history work, and me specifically with trans oral history work in Iowa. One of the really beautiful, amazing things that happens when you interview people about their life is they bring out material, right? They bring out their photographs, their newspaper clippings, their protest signs to help tell their story in an interview, and because people get so excited, they want to share, the community things and projects they've been a part of. And so for a number of years, I think AJ and I have been talking back and forth as leaders in queer oral history work in Iowa, saying, somebody needs to collect this material. But for me personally, as someone who moved to Iowa City as a graduate student, I felt really temporary in Iowa City and felt like, maybe it shouldn't be me. I don't know when I'm going to leave. I don't know when the job market will push me out of Iowa. But I think the COVID-19 pandemic shifted some of that reality. And we realized that queer and trans folks do have a complicated relationship, especially trans folks and trans folks of color, with healthcare access, and also are often essential workers. And so we were really worried about the narratives and the people we would lose on top of perhaps some of the elderly community in across Iowa.
So this really took on a sense of urgency for you personally.
Definitely. We don't want to lose our stories and we don't want to lose our history. And COVID-19, on top of last year's legislative attempts to not protect gender identity as a class status in Iowa, and now this year's, it really felt like queer and trans Iowans were under a particular type of attack. And so we had to act fast.
It seems like the pandemic must have been a push and a pull at the same time, because, of course, opening a public space in the midst of a pandemic is a terrifying prospect.
It is. And, you know, we avoided I don't want to say avoided. We didn't start with a space right away. We started with a manifesto, and we started with sending mail to people to let folks know that we care about LGBTQ history and that we have a lot of stories to share already from this state that are kind of in our general memory or collective memory that get talked about here and there, but that people don't know very well. So we started with these history by letters, as we call them. And then as the project grew and people started to learn about the project, we expected to just house materials in our apartments, house books and hold on to them. So many community archives started that way. And then we very fortunately received a large donation of books from the Des Moines Pride Center as they were trying to cull and make space in their lending library in Des Moines. And so that necessitated us actually getting a physical space and starting the project in a new chapter in November.
Yeah, tell me about this history by letters. What's that about?
Yeah, so we send out a monthly piece of mail that shares one narrative from Iowa's LGBTQ past. So we could share a biography, the history of an organization, a narrative of a movement or an event. They're lightly researched. We always try to cite at least one book. So if people want to learn more about the kind of general topic, they can check out that book from our library. But we've covered the history of Grant Wood, the history of the Iowa City Women's Press, the history of RFD, which was a gay countryman's magazine from the 1970s that was first published out of Grinnell. And it moved to Oregon, so people kind of lost the memory that it was an Iowa magazine to start and an Iowa project. So these are really short, kind of bite-sized, accessible narratives just to get people knowing and sharing our past and get people excited about it.
You mentioned your gallery space. Tell me about what you're showcasing right now and what you hope to showcase in the future.
Yeah, so we still have our first show installed, which is by a local Iowa City-based artist who has ties to Grinnell, actually, Ann S. Rogers, and their work is their show is called Leaving Pants on the Floor, and their work is very material-based and thinks about the daily use of objects and clothing in particular and the degradation of clothing. And it's really a beautiful show. So I recommend it. It's still up, so if people can stop by, you should. But the gallery space was a bonus room. We didn't quite have the library and archival material to fill all the space that we're currently renting. And we realized that, too, in response to the pandemic, artists have lost a lot of opportunities to exhibit their work, to be a part of shows, whether they're solo shows or group shows. And so we wanted to lend another form of community support to queer Iowans and to showcase history in the making in that sense. So we invite any LGBTQ Iowans, whether you live in Iowa now or have at some point, to look into our gallery space and see if that's the right fit for you, because it is pretty small. And we're really trying to prioritize queer and trans artists, trans artists specifically, just recognizing the kind of intersectional difficulties of being an artist and folks of color. So we're really hoping that this gallery space stays for, you know, the year to come at least, and that we get to do a number of great shows. We've got a couple lined up in April. Our next show will definitely be up, and it's by an artist named Quell, who does these really great, like, eco trash weavings.
That sounds fascinating. You also, of course, you mentioned the lending library, which started with this large donation, but this is something you're continuing to try to build, right?
Oh, definitely. The donation from Des Moines Pride Center, we have to shout out, has been so great to give us a really strong start. We took on 1,100 books from them, and as I said, we're almost at 1,300, and those are all community donated. The other 200 or so books we've collected so far. And we're prioritizing right now a drive to get K-12 LGBTQ-friendly books. We have a really cute book cart. And our goal is to fill it with kid and teen friendly material. And then to be able to, once the weather's nicer, wheel it around Iowa City to locations where and different organizations where queer and trans youth are supported in our community, so they have access to these books, not just in our space, but around the community in Iowa City.
What has community response been like so far?
Oh, it's been incredible. It is amazing to see that even during a pandemic, there's a lot of folks who've stopped by and wanted to come check it out. We have a really good problem that we have too many people who want to volunteer right now, which is, it's just amazing to see an outpour of community excitement, community response that folks want to use this space. We all can't wait until the pandemic, allows us to be safer and really gather together and have things like book clubs and board game nights and speakers and readings and things that you would expect from really a public library in some ways, but geared towards the queer community. So I think there's an incredible amount of excitement and an incredible amount of like hope and future vision that this space, although we're starting small and trying to keep it safe during COVID, that we just have the potential to keep growing and really become a central community resource.
Well, and even now you do have an opportunity for people to come in person. So what is that opportunity at this point in time? You're open 7 days a week, right?
We are. So we're open nights and weekends for 3 to 4 hours at a time. And we invite people to come in and look at our lending library and check out books. So you can have a patron account and check out books for up to 2 months from our collection. And of course, come see the gallery space and see the shows that'll be on view throughout the rest of the year. Our policy, it's nice, people have to call to get in so we can kind of monitor the number of folks that are in the space at a time and make sure that each room is kind of how we've designated it. Each room is one household visit at a time. So our argument is we're probably safer than the grocery store during COVID. You have to wear masks. We have masks available. And because one of the reasons we opened 7 days a week was to give more windows of opportunity, so we're not crowded being open just 2 days, right? And everybody trying to come at once. So I think 7 days a week gives us a lot of space to keep it safe. And of course, we'll follow any guidelines that come through as the pandemic progresses.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment, and we're really going to dig into the oral history part of your project, Aiden, and of course the project in Grinnell as well. With me, Aiden Bettine, director of the LGBTQ Iowa Archives and Library in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake, Iowa has been declared a National Historic Landmark. We will talk about the history of the ballroom. With me right now, though, we've got another kind of history that we're talking about. But Aiden Bettine is here. He is director of the LGBTQ Iowa Archives and Library in Iowa City. He is also creator of the Transgender Oral History Project of Iowa. And I want to really focus now on oral history, both with this project and another project out of Grinnell. AJ Lewis is here, assistant professor of gender and women's sexuality studies at Grinnell College. And you are also one of the founders of the LGBT Oral Histories of Central Iowa Project, which was founded in 2019. AJ, welcome to the show.
Hi, Charity. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thank you for being here. And Aiden, you already mentioned that you and AJ worked together. So AJ, I'm going to turn to you first, and let's start by talking about what you feel the importance of having an LGBT oral history project is. Why? What was the genesis of this idea?
The way that I would mainly think of the sort of value of oral history for LGBT folks and for many marginalized groups, I think of it as having kind of like two major domains of value. One is about establishing a sort of like fuller, more vibrant, heterogeneous historical record. So there's a value about history. And then there's a lot of work, I think, about sort of present community life and the politics of being queer, today, which Aiden was actually kind of speaking to. If you get the sense that the LGBTQ Iowa's archives and library is very much being intentionally designed as a community space, not just a historical repository, which I think is admirable about it. But in the domain of history, oral history is a method that's been really prized by progressive historians and specifically historians of marginalized groups. It's not entirely unique to LGBTQ people, but like many other marginalized communities, a kind of basic condition of social marginality is that we're very poorly captured by sort of traditional or dominant modes of historical documentation. You know, we're mostly not famous dead white men who leave behind prodigious collections of personal papers that then can be conveniently archived, you know, in a university or public library somewhere. You know, for queer communities in particular, who need to remember, like, you know, until 1973, we were all kind of officially just a mental pathology, not even, you know, regarded as, you know, a minority community that has a culture and has a history. You know, in particular with queer communities, the main way that we tend to get protected or, you know, preserved by the historical record tends to be things like, you know, medical records that get left behind or legal records, et cetera, which are, you know, not kinds of sources that are mostly authored by queer communities. They're authored by credentialed professionals who studied us or, you know, were involved in our legal travails. And so they're really perspectival sources, right, that are kind of outsider perspectives on LGBTQ community life. And in contrast, one of the reasons why oral testimony has been so prized for underrepresented groups is specifically because it's a sort of approach that tries to counter both historical erasure generally, but also an approach that's really invested in having the person being interviewed, whom we usually call narrators or co-collaborators, in like really giving space to sort of underrepresented individuals and communities to really speak to their own lives in an open-ended way, in which the authority is really on them to kind of determine, you know, what's important to their life and their community and what to talk about. And I think this has been, you know, particularly valuable for, you know, regions like, for instance, Iowa that don't have the same kind of sort of institutional presence and visibility that we get, you know, in major cities like New York or San Francisco. And, you know, I think that, that LGBT history in Iowa, I'll defer to Aiden's perspective on this also, is like, you know, really, really underdocumented compared to more urban parts of the country. Oral testimony is often like the place where you kind of have to start when there just simply aren't other forms of preservation. So I would say, you know, historically, it's a really key method for capturing the voices of marginalized or underrepresented groups, and also doing so in a way that's really deferring to those marginalized groups' sort of authority.
We seem to have lost AJ, and of course, we'll get him back on the line here in just a moment. And Aiden, did you have anything that you'd like to add to that? What AJ was just saying about how maybe in larger urban areas, thinking about New York City and San Francisco, that there is more of a sense of history and a recognition for the LGBTQ communities that have been there all along. And maybe that's something we're missing in Iowa?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, queer community archives and libraries like the LGBTQ Iowa Archives and Library exist across the country. There's just countless at this point, but so many of them in urban spaces originated in the 70s or 80s. Just because people were out and queer and predominantly lesbian and gay in the 70s and 80s, but they were together making community space in urban centers. So places like Iowa and some other Midwestern and Southern states that maybe don't have as big of a major metropolis like Chicago or San Francisco or New York or LA really got left behind in this queer history making and community, sense of community space. And so, you know, we're seeing a lot of these types of projects being founded in the 21st century. Like, we are not rare in that movement, but we're the first to really center Iowa and queer Iowans.
We are going to hear a little bit from an oral history interview that is part of the collection at Grinnell. This is a clip from Sister Clara about her time and work creating queer community in a farmhouse in Jasper County.
It was our Saturday night social club for country queers, we called it. And so Tom had put an ad into the register long before internet, of course, just a support group for gay, straight, bi, questioning men you know, outside of a bar. And he would kind of vet them through, you know, through correspondence. And they would, we'd get together, you know, every month at our farm. So for us, having that monthly kind of group, a support group, was a wonderful thing to have in our home too, because people from all over, you know, there would be maybe a 75-year-old closeted farmer who in his heart, he was gay, but his wife had no idea where he was at, his kids and his grandkids or whatever, but he just wanted to be around, you know, other gay people or you know, guys who are, you know, 18 years old, and certainly they weren't going to go to a bar, but they wanted to figure out what queer culture was outside of that, you know.
That's just a short excerpt from an oral history interview with Sister Clara, and talking about building a queer community in rural Iowa. And of course, that was a really underground community, as it had to be in so many ways at that time. AJ, in trying to get people to share their stories, to create this history, to create this oral history, is it difficult to get people to share things that they hid for many years?
I think, you know, that raises, I think, an important, like, ethical question attendant to oral history. My apologies for losing you guys momentarily there.
No
Thanks
worries.
For filling in, Aiden. You know, what I've found, you know, and I have the real privilege of working with a student body that has a very queer and trans presence, and most of my pretty much all the students who worked on the project also identify as LGBTQ. I think sort of like Aiden was describing, you know, the overwhelming response that I think that we've gotten to the project is a real desire to share stories, which also includes, like, you know, many personal stories and, you know, stories of experiencing anti-LGBTQ oppression. And I think the overwhelming response has been a real desire simply for the ability for those experiences to be memorialized. Which include not just our experiences of community formation and joy, but also like establishing a record and not forgetting much more distressing, you know, experiences of discrimination and violence in Iowa history. This is part of our history also. And I think there's, you know, often a real desire to make sure that there's that, you know, the community in the present doesn't forget those moments that are also, like, that are less sort of safe or you're simply about, you know, thriving community.
How do your this really has been a student led project, AJ, but how do you recruit people to share their stories?
You know, that's a kind of interesting element of developing the project. I should mark that I'm fairly new to Iowa. I do not identify as an expert on local history. And in particular, it's based out of Grinnell, which, like, actually has very inconsistent ties to community life beyond campus. You know, I really put it on the ingenuity of my students, where I was like, you guys are going to have to do the hustling and outreach and, you know, PR to kind of get the word out. I wasn't, to be honest, it was a project started in a kind of experimental, you know, spirit and wasn't sure how well it would work. But I think, again, like, you know, it hasn't been a challenge collecting testimonies, you know, even within a community context where not everyone is super connected and a lot of community members experience, you know, degrees of sort of isolation, that it, simply the matter of getting the word out, I think, has produced a lot of sort of like, you know, proactive response on the part of many queer Iowans and their desire to be to participate and tell their stories, which I think both speaks to kind of the value of oral history and also the real need to be doing this kind of work in the context like Iowa.
Well, Aiden, I want to talk a little bit about your oral history project as well. We were talking about the LGBTQ Iowa Archives and Library mostly earlier, a brand new organization in Iowa City. But you're also the creator of the Transgender Oral History Project of Iowa. Tell me more.
Yes, yeah, so the Transgender Oral History Project is much what it sounds like in its name. It's a trans, non-binary, gender non-conforming centered oral history project, and we're all community run and driven, which has been perhaps what has led to this project growing very slowly over the course of the past few years, because our priority is that trans and non-binary people are interviewing one another. So one of the big arms of our project is that we actually offer oral history training to community members so that we can empower each other to know and tell and share and collect our stories as trans people with an affinity to the state of Iowa.
The stories you're collecting, Aiden, how do you see them being accessed and used in the future?
So we are going to be building a digital archive. And what's fascinating is we're actually going to be using an indigenous digital archival platform called Mukurtu. That's M-U-K-U-R-T-U. And it allows for various layers, essentially, of access. So there's always a public-facing page to this platform where anyone can access these narratives and listen to the stories. But then there's more granular layers where maybe a researcher could ask for permission and get a deeper level of information. Community members can say, hey, you know, this is a really personal part of my story that I don't want to share publicly, and I only want other trans and gender nonconforming people to hear this part of my narrative. So we're building a digital archive, which takes a lot of time to afford this type of kind of varied public and private access.
AJ, you have your oral history project available online, so people can come and they can listen. They are pretty long files, so if you're really interested, you sit down for many hours, really, and explore the stories of people. How do you see this being used now, and what's your vision for this collection in the future?
I think you know, candidly, one of my sort of responses to you is I'm not entirely sure that, like, I have a kind of, at least the way that I've tried to lead the project is with a sort of obligation to sort of community direction over it. So part of my answer is, like, you know, I see myself more as a facilitator to try to make happen whatever sort of participants in the project want to see done with the interviews. You know, establishing a public record, Aiden and I have very different approaches to how we sort of do design of archives, which, like, I'm really into Aiden's. I think there needs to be a plurality of approaches. That, like, a first step was simply creating a sort of public-facing platform that, like, LGBTQ Iowans at large can see. My students are very, I think, on board with oral history practice as a kind of community organizing practice in its own right. And I would say the main priority for the archive now that's been invested, well, that's gotten started out of, you know, a small liberal arts college, is not so out of line with what Aiden is describing. I think myself and my students working on it think that our main priority going forward is opening up as many more venues for participation to communities at large beyond the college that we're based out of, to not just be narrators, but also be, you know, trained as interviewers so they can, you know, interview other queer people in their life, much how Aiden was describing, and also doing whatever we can to sort of support community initiatives who might want to make use of the materials for whatever their purposes are. So we've had a sort of investment in kind of building relationships with community groups and sort of, like, trying to learn from them what kinds of ends in the present that a historical archive can ensure. And also because I think that, you know, oral history interviewing can be a kind of powerful technique for building relationships, you know, especially across generations. It's a student-driven project. Like, due to the nature of our identities, like, queer young people don't often have avenues for intergenerational relationship building.
We're nearly out of time, AJ. I just want to ask both of you before we run out of time, AJ, if somebody's listening right now who would love to share their story, is there an opportunity for that?
The short answer is yes. The project has the word Central Iowa in it, and we're really not into policing either region or LGBTQ, really anyone who is identifies with LGBTQ community and with Iowa is enthusiastically invited to share their stories. I should just mark that we're essentially a kind of volunteer-driven project, so the only holdup is capacity, like labor capacity on our end, but we do everything that we possibly can to include stories as quickly as possible from anyone who's interested in participating.
All right, and Aiden, is there an opportunity for people to get involved in the Transgender Oral History Project?
Oh, there definitely is, and I would say contact us through the LGBTQ Iowa Archives and Library, since it's now housed inside. So you can just visit lgbtqiowa.org, click on our Get Involved page, and you'll be in touch with us.
Great. Aiden Bateen, thank you so much for being here. AJ, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
AJ Lewis, Assistant Professor of Gender, Women's, and Sexuality Studies at Grinnell College. Aiden Bateen is Director of the LGBTQ Iowa Archives and Library in Iowa City and the creator of the Transgender Oral History Project of Iowa. Coming up in just a moment, the history of the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.